Once more unto the breach, dear friends, else close the wall up with our English dead. Good morning again, ladies and gentlemen, boy and girl, hopefully. This is Jake McClure. This is the Personal Wealth Coach. On the line with me, hopefully, we'll see if we can do this while my hands stay attached to my wrists, should be Elder Baldy Jeff McClure. Are you there, sir?
I am here.
All right.
But I'm not there.
We have a problem in locality. If you're not here, then you must be there. But if I say you're there and you say you're here, it's provably true that you're not here, except that it's provably true to you that you are.
So I want to know why you think there is one boy and one girl.
That's hopeful.
Listening to this.
Wishful thinking. Hoping that one boy and one girl in our audience actually exist. The reality is that it's Saturday morning. Why would they be listening, number one, to AM radio? Number two, to two bald guys talk about the dreary science of economics. I mean, I hope there's somebody out there, you know, I hope that there is a young boy or a young girl or both, possibly, listening to this and having their mental state forever warped by thinking like economists. But for some reason, I don't have a strong feeling that way.
You and I would have done that when we were young.
Yeah, we would have.
We would have turned on the AM radio hidden in our bedroom where our parents couldn't hear that we were listening to such things.
Horrible things like economics. You're
and
right.
And we would have geeked out on that.
I didn't have to hide, and that was helpful in that I just talked to my dad about it. But that's not the normal across most of the country. But we're not done with our disclosures. Do you want
to? We need to just.
Put your clothes back on. That's not what we mean.
Well, that's one of the things that's going on across the country is the fact that people are not wearing their appropriate clothes. The Personal Wealth Coach is not only the name of this radio program, which you may have figured out by now. You may have deduced that.
Yes. Is there a dog drinking behind you?
There's actually some coffee running.
Oh, that's what that is. Okay. So go ahead.
See, this is the new 21st century.
After
2020
COVID,
version of reality.
Everyone.
AC. Anyway, the Personal Wealth Coach is not only the name of this radio program, but is also the name of a registered investment advisory firm, and registered as opposed to non-registered, and registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. Now, we say that not because the Securities and Exchange Commission approves of what we do. They don't approve of anything. They authorize things sometimes, but they never approve of anything, which makes them pretty negative. Anyway. But because we're registered with them, and they are a primary regulatory agency, which means that we are technically a large investment advisor as opposed to a small investment advisor. Anyway.
Yes.
And the fact that the two are the same thing, the two principals on this radio program and the principals at the investment advisory firm, which is based in Salado, Texas, are the same guys. But we're not giving investment advice on the radio because that would be bad for more different ways than I'm going to think about. We give instead educational information, which is different. Investment advice is given to individuals based on their individual needs and desires and tolerances and a whole bunch of other things. Whereas information that we give is educational. It's designed to raise your ability to make good decisions about investments and things of that ilk and the economy and so on. And also because we like to do it.
Right.
And the information we present here is obtained from sources we deem, this is my one opportunity during the week to use this term, we deem reliable.
See, you deem it as your only opportunity in the week. You should deem more often.
Well, I'm thinking about different ways of using it. I use redeem more often than I use deem, which seems to be ridiculous, but
yeah.
I do it
well,
anyway.
Well, I mean, it makes sense. There's a statistical parallel here. Shall I give it to you?
Sure.
We've all heard the statistic that the majority of marriages in the United States end in divorce. Let me give you some good news about that statistic, and it goes right along with our silliness over what we just said, over deem and redeem.
You're going to tell us that the majority of first marriages do not end in divorce.
That's right. The vast majority of first marriages stay. And I know that sounds like I just said two different things. It's just that you've got a roughly a 60% chance of making it in your first marriage. But if you're in that 40% that didn't make it, and you got a divorce once, you're about 70% likely to get divorced again. So it's the multiple marriages that skew the multiple marriages statistics. How's that for you?
So just means that I think that every high school student should have to pass a course in statistical analysis.
Yeah. But all I'm saying there is that you use redeem more often than you use deem, because all you have to do is deem once and you can redeem all day because it's just doing it again. So of course you do it more than you deem. I deem that you redeem more than you deem.
See, when I buy something, does that mean I'm deeming it? Because when I return it, it's I redeem it. But I never deemed it to begin with. I could say that if I buy something, I deemed it worth buying.
Yes.
But don't say that.
Deeming something is an opinion backed by action.
Oh.
So if you deem something to be correct, it means not only is it your opinion, you have put something behind it. And when you are redeemed, it means you had a really bad opinion about something and it's become good, or vice versa. But that's really hard to follow.
I think we should restart that word into common usage.
I agree. I've been requesting it for at least 5 years as we deemed on the radio. I think it's a great word. I deem it. And I backed it with commitment of wanting to use the word deem, so I deem it to be a good word.
And I think it's more likely to catch on than dumpster fire.
Yeah, much to my chagrin. Dumpster fire is just too big a word choice to describe this catastrophe. We need a one-syllable word, or at the minimum, a short number to describe what's happening. And
I like that you call it a catastrophe, because cats don't get good press.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you caught the news during the break that they now have discovered that not only cats but dogs carry coronavirus. There have been two cases recorded so far.
I think statistically that's insignificant.
I would say so, but it made national news, which is the definition of national news. Statistically insignificant items.
That are interesting.
They're interesting, yeah.
Okay, we got to get one more disclosure.
All right, let's go for it.
We don't pay for this radio program. However, we do pay. We are not paid by KTEM to perform this radio program. And what's more interesting is we advertise on KTEM. And we advertise for the radio program on KTEM. That was a required disclosure we have now disclosed.
We have done it. It's
we do receive a benefit. We do have a conflict of interest. It's not pure fiduciary. We do notice that people recognize us more often when we say our names. Now, they don't recognize us by our faces. I haven't figured that out yet. But when we say our names, people are more likely to recognize us.
Yes.
Because we do the radio program.
Well, it's because masks are mandatory. See? So they wouldn't be able to recognize our faces at this point. So I have been recognized more often standing in lines where the person's not looking at me than I have, at least in the last decade or so, at public events and so on, where people just hear my voice and they turn around and they go, "Jake McClure?" And I go, "Yes, how did you know?" And it's your voice. So it's like I actually use this thing when I'm not on the air.
Have we actually gotten any new business from this radio program? Maybe some.
Sure. Well, years ago we got, I guess when we first started it, years ago, we got a series of clients out of having the radio program. But the reality is that when you're dealing with net worth of million-dollar-plus investable. People don't make their decision about who to invest with just because they have a radio program. Isn't that weird?
Really?
Yeah, it's
That's
like
strange.
People actually do investigations, figure out if somebody's competent rather than just popular. Yeah, so...
Now, that could be the new scandal.
Now, having said that, we did get clients early on. So why do we do the radio program? People ask me that, you know, you talk about this sort of thing. Because we do talk to our existing clients on it. And we talk to people who aren't existing clients to tell them good things to do. We are firm believers in capitalism. So we donate our time on Saturday morning. Wait a minute, does that sound like a backwards thing? Adam Smith's version of capitalism requires that people actually make educated decisions, that they make decisions in their own best interest that they know to be in their own best interest. That means they have to be, that has to get explained somehow. And why did I bring up Adam Smith? Because the whole invisible hand thing. If you don't know what I'm talking about, look it up. Throughout his body of work, throughout his lifetime, he talked about capitalism. So long as you're not hurting the people around you and you're working in your own best interest, then you're going to raise your whole community as if by an invisible hand. And that's a paraphrase of about six different times he wrote it.
So you're saying that Adam Smith's body of work had an invisible hand?
Yes. So he had a body. There's a corpus with a hand, and it's like pulling. No. Capitalism works in a way different than the cold, cutthroat idea that a lot of people have for it. We're doing this program because if there are more people that do well, then we're likely to benefit from that. Isn't that amazing? It's like if our trading partner has more money to buy stuff from us with, we can sell more stuff to them. And that goes into everything. If everybody's doing better, business gets better. I know that sounds like common sense, but for some reason, people think that in a business dealing, you've just got to go for the throat. And the reality is that if you want to do business with this person again, having them lying with their throat ripped out is probably not the best idea for your long-term business partnership. Yeah. So, do you want to talk about the market?
Might as well. We measure the market using the S&P 500 stock index, and the reason we do that, it is the broadest index that is reported regularly. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is really interesting, but it's only 30 stocks, and sometimes it goes in a different direction than the S&P 500. The NASDAQ is kind of weird, so we stick with the S&P 500 stock index. Anyway, the market closed on Thursday rather than Friday because it felt like it.
Yeah. Well, it usually closes on Thursday, but then it's open again on Friday to close again.
But it closed for the week. It didn't open up on Friday.
Right. Because
despite the fact that it was
practicing independence.
That's right.
Yeah.
We moved it today.
Happy Independence Day, everybody.
Anyway, it was up 4.02% from last Friday's close. And that was following the jobs report, which I hope we're going to talk about some.
Oh, yes.
The jobs report is, I hate to break this to folks, but the jobs report was pretty inaccurate again.
It can't really be accurate very well right now.
Well, it says the unemployment rate dropped to 11.1%, but based on the people, but then they get this, 13.1% of the working population is currently drawing unemployment benefits. But the unemployment rate is only 11.1%.
So
that is a contradiction.
15%? Yes, it is a contradiction, and that's the point.
13.1%, right. No, 13.5% of the working population in the United States, and not the whole, 13.5% of the people who are eligible for unemployment insurance, and everybody is not, is drawing unemployment insurance. But the unemployment rate was officially reported 11.1%,
yeah,
which would seem to mean that about 2.4% of the population is drawing unemployment insurance while they're not unemployed, which is technically correct, but it isn't what it sounds like.
Yeah.
But we'll get back to that.
Yeah. So there's two ways of measuring unemployment in one report. There's the household survey, which calls people up. And then there's the numbers they get from employers. Those are different numbers. And then to make it even more complex, we have something called the U6, which measures workers looking for jobs but working part-time for economic reasons. So they actually have a job, but they're looking for a full-time job, or those that have looked for work in the last year.
Then there's another one.
Right. Yes. So go ahead.
The other one is the number of people who are drawing unemployment insurance, which is different and is reported weekly. And what a lot of people don't understand is the unemployment rate that's reported monthly is actually from the middle of the previous month.
And to explain some of this confusion, because it sounds like this is just horribly done. What are these bureaucrats thinking, having all these different numbers? They've got to collect data on all the employment in the country. How many times in your careers have you called in to figure out if your vacation was on or off? HR is not so good at getting it right all the time, everywhere, in every company. What about sole proprietorships? Well, you just got to guess on those. You got to do a survey, and because people aren't really calling up all the small business owners in the country and saying, did you lay people off this week? There would be as many bureaucrats at that point as there are business owners. And I know sometimes it feels that way, but it's really not. They're a very small percentage. We don't want them to equal the same number or nothing would get done.
Wait a minute now. Those are good bureaucrats that figure this out. That's
absolutely
the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Absolutely. And
they are
bureaucrats, self-identified as being bureaucrats. But the reality is that they cannot know the employment situation in the country without actually being right next to you as you're hiring and firing or getting hired or getting fired.
But they can't be next to us because we have social distancing.
They've got to be doing it in a mask. You don't want everybody would have to be assigned a bureaucrat. And that bureaucrat would follow them around and check to see if they're employed on a regular basis. And that might actually give us up-to-date information on employment. But it's also a gross violation of privacy. So all these numbers have been anonymized. They've been stripped clean so that the government can look at this and not be making judgments on individuals based on their employment status, but rather based on groups of individuals based on their employment status.
Anyway, the fact is unemployment is all out of whack compared with normal reporting. Normally, if someone is furloughed, they're not counted as unemployed. And a pretty good-sized chunk of the people who currently are drawing unemployment insurance are technically not unemployed because the business that they left, the business that laid them off, didn't really lay them off. It furloughed them.
Right.
And when it furloughs them, it means we intend to hire you back. You're not really unemployed. You're just temporarily not working for us.
So that big number that I was saying, the U6, with everybody that's been looking for work in the last year, even if they've stopped, we peaked out there just up close to 23% when things got bad, and we're down to about 18%. So even that's good news, but it's more reasonably looking good news than having 11% unemployed while 13% are receiving unemployment benefits.
Well, one of the things that we're missing in this unemployment report that came out that looked a little better, it looked a little less worse. Remember that it is still over three times the number of people unemployed that we had in February.
Right. This is called a frog in the water syndrome, where it feels better because it's not burning the skin off of our body. It's better than it was, but it's still, at any other time, we would say, get out of the pot.
What it didn't capture, for example, is in Texas, the bars and restaurants had opened up pretty much 2 weeks ago, middle of June. And they had hired back a lot of their waiters and a lot of their bartenders and a lot of their waitresses. And the people who work there, a lot of them got hired back temporarily. And now, for example, in Texas, Florida, Arizona, and California, they got closed again.
Yeah. And this is an area I really wanted to spend some time on that subject. So I want you to finish your thought, but let's put a bookmark
okay.
in our brains here.
Yeah, it's important. Anyway, let's talk about the 10-year Treasury note yield. Agreed with the stock market. It rose about 4% to 0.673%, which is still absurdly low. West Texas Intermediate crude oil, WTI, grows about 5% to $40 a barrel. Now, it continues to trade through the weekend and across holidays and so on, but it's staying around $40 a barrel, which is a lot better than it was when it was a negative $37 a barrel, but certainly not where it was at the $100 a barrel it was a few years ago, which means that Chesapeake, by the way, Chesapeake Drilling.
One of the biggest fracking companies.
Yeah.
Well, maybe the biggest
first big
fracking.
One. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the fund that started fracking, the fracking revolution, and it declared bankruptcy this week, which tells you a lot. And there's a lot of changes going on, and we don't even begin to understand what they are and won't until this is all over and we start sources. You know, I made this reference before, and I think it's important. This is a lot like a hurricane.
Yeah.
And the hurricane is still going on, and we may have seen the eye of the hurricane pass by, or we may not. I mean, it may get, but I strongly suspect that the backside of this hurricane will be, if anything, worse than the front side. And we haven't really experienced the backside of this thing yet. History tells us that the second wave, which has not come, we're still in the first wave, tends to be more destructive than the first wave. We can talk about that for a while during the rest of the next 2 hours,
yeah.
Too.
Let me hit some really fundamental things since we're on this subject really quick.
Sure. So
very, very fundamental things. I did something I've not done in probably a year. I logged into Facebook yesterday.
Ooh.
Yeah. And just looking at my news feed, wow. I saw some amazing reposts and posts that people are handing on about face masks and now I understand where the confusion is. People are talking about how it's not safe to wear face masks because they're going to get the bug and that's not going to protect you. It's not an N95. I know this is difficult, but it's not difficult for the people listening to this program. The people listening to this program, you're listening because you're opening your mind or you already know this stuff and it's cool to hear it again. When you're wearing a mask that's not an N95 mask, I know this is going to be weird. It isn't to protect yourself because it won't. It's not. If somebody coughs right in your face, it's not going to protect you from whatever they have. It's to protect everybody else if you are positive and don't have symptoms right now. It means that if you do cough, the cough will be a lot closer to you than the 6 feet. This is not a protect myself move by putting on a cloth mask. It's to protect everybody around you. And yes, it does impinge on our own rights, but the Republican Party of my youth was the party of personal responsibility. Did that all go away? I know I'm just called out the Republicans, but it's a Republican thing right now. It has been taken up as a political movement, and that's shocking to me because all the way up to a couple of weeks ago, I think it was just kind of a feeling of it must be the left attacking. I don't know where this is coming from, and it's frankly disturbing because it's damaging to the Republican Party. Who's going to get the most sick? It's going to be the people that are congregating around people that aren't wearing masks, and the people that congregate around people that don't wear masks tend to have the same political viewpoints. This is like the recipe for disaster if you just look at any pandemic fictional book. Just pick it up and you would read the first page and go, oh, you know what's going to happen there. kind of apply that same reasoning. Open up your brain again and recognize that masks aren't a save myself. It's if we do this together, kind of like don't jaywalk in traffic, kind of like don't drive on the left side of the road. Yeah, that protects yourself too, but it certainly protects everybody else. And I wanted to hit that because I didn't realize how rampant the other side of this is of, hey, it's my right and it's not going to protect me anyway. That to me sounds really destructive. It will protect you. It's kind of like No, I'm going to go into a minefield here. It's kind of like vaccination in general, except vaccination will help you as well. This is like the low end of the vaccination cycle where you're not giving each other the bug. Let's start at that. And I realize I spent a lot of time talking about this, but I didn't realize the depth of strong belief on this subject. It doesn't take a great experiment. Take your mask off in a bathroom in front of a mirror. Make sure it's your own mirror and you've got stuff to clean with. And do a fake sneeze. Try it. See if the mirror will get sneeze on it. Now put your mask on and try it. You're going to see a little difference. That's common sense. But for some reason, it's been so politicized about it seems to be confusing the issue, because there are masks that will prevent you from getting it. N95 masks. And if you've got one and it's not keeping other people that need them from having it, you wear that too. That's great. That means you don't get it as well. And why is an economist on here talking about this? Because I'm great at statistics. And when we look at the numbers, I know what those numbers mean. I think you guys do too. And wearing a mask in every way, shape, and form, in every place it's been tested, lowers the infection rate. That's the news I'm bringing here, is that if you wear a mask, you're less likely to be infected, and so's everyone around you. So, and it doesn't mean if somebody comes up to you with coronavirus and coughs in your face that you have the immunity bubble. You don't. But it does mean that if you're carrying it and you cough, you may not be getting my mom sick or your mom sick. So just wear the mask. And I realize there's mandatory, and we buck authority. I'm a libertarian more than anything else. And yeah, I want to buck authority, and you can't tell me what to do. Well, yeah, they can. On a lot of stuff. Like, you're not allowed to take your gun out and start shooting it in the air for July 4th. Well, why not? Because those bullets come down. They probably won't hit you. We all look at that and say, yeah, that's a dumb thing to do. Well, this is the same thing. Let's kind of step back from being so sensitive about this and just say this makes sense based on the facts. All right, that was my probably useless, because I don't think if somebody believed the other way, I don't think they've changed their mind. And if they believed the other way, they're probably not listening to an economics radio program. So,
well, I got there's some better news even yet. If you have a mask that has two layers and one of them is silk or something similar, the kind of stuff that if you rub it on glass, it develops a static charge on the inside, and cloth, cotton, for example, tightly cotton on the outside, it provides almost as much protection as an M95 mask. That's recent data that's come out. The fundamental truth is that where people wear masks, the coronavirus spreads, the COVID-19 disease spreads far less fast than in places where they're not wearing masks. Now, you can boil it down to the fact that that mask doesn't, if you're wearing a cloth mask, it doesn't protect you that much, based on the fact that the virus is small enough to get through the weave of the cloth. But there's simple, you know, we may not understand why. We may not understand all the aspects of why. But the reality is, wearing a mask and staying at least 6 feet away from somebody, even when you're outside, helps tremendously. Avoiding groups of people when you're inside. In other words, if you have a group of people inside a building, and this has been shown over and over and over and over and over again now, you have a group of people inside a building, even if they're wearing cloth masks, even if they're staying 6 feet apart, that air is circulating inside that building, and you can easily get, and there's been several cases where it's been very carefully documented, where one person in the room, one person in a restaurant, infected 60% of the people in the restaurant, even though they were sitting a considerable distance apart, because they were all in there an hour and a half, and the air conditioning system was simply circulating the air around in the restaurant. And I don't know of any air conditioning system, in Texas at least, that exhausts air and draws in the fresh hot air from the outside. It circulates the air, there's no filter. Even the best air conditioning filter you can buy won't stop that virus from circulating. There's some real common sense things you can do, because if you don't do them, then eventually you or somebody you know is going to get the virus, and eventually somebody you know is going to die from it. And even if you don't die from it, there's another aspect here, and I think it's very important to understand. The numbers are not solid on this, but about 15% of the people, apparently, who have symptomatic COVID-19, in other words, they have the cough, they have the fever, even though they're young and they get over the initial effects of the disease, about 15% of them are now reporting long-term effects of the disease, which may not go away. Lung damage and nervous damage. There's a post-viral nervous inflammation disorder that apparently a significant number of people who get COVID-19, even if they're young, develop a few months after they had COVID-19. This is without even a tongue-in-cheek, I can say this thing's a real killer. I think people are beginning to recognize the reality of it and are beginning to react to it, and I certainly hope so.
Good news on that front. And I said this to you on the way in. I drive into the radio studio. It's like the only drive that I do per week. I live very close to my office, so I can get there. And there's not very many people in my office, and we're very well spread out, and we wear masks, and we have hand sanitizer. We're washing our hands lots and lots. On the road, last week the traffic was about half of what it was the week before on Saturday. And this week it was about half that. So we're roughly a quarter the traffic on the highway of what we were just 3 weeks ago. And that's significant. Yeah, the governor issued a mask order, but he hasn't told everybody to lock down. There's two counties in Texas that are in lockdown now. The fact that we're taking this seriously, I was at a park yesterday, and any other day on a holiday, a July 4th holiday, a July 3rd yesterday, that place would have been packed. There were just a few families, and they were staying a long ways away from each other. So we're getting it, and part of me saying I don't think I've convinced anybody that wasn't convinced already is that I can see the actions being taken here in Texas, and you and I agree, we talked about this on the way in, that the numbers are going to flatten out in Texas because people are taking precautions now. For some reason, they were full on not before, but they are now.
I think there was a tendency to believe that when the lockdown was removed, there was some people read the headlines and they don't read the articles in many cases. Information overload is having an effect on us. And they said, okay, the lockdown is removed, the danger is gone. But this disease, this COVID-19 disease, is like a forest fire when we've been having a drought. Nobody is immune to it unless you've already had it.
Yeah.
And it is Vicky, my wife, who coincidentally is Jake's mother.
Yes. I don't know how that happened. I just, some weird coincidence there.
She was in a group where somebody described it as, if you have, let's say that there's nine people get together, and you're going to have a crafts party, and everybody gets to bring their own craft, whatever they want to do. And eight of you bring crafts like quilting or crochet or something like that. And one person decides to bring glitter and put glitter on things.
I knew you were going to use glitter in here somewhere, and you said crafts.
How many people will have glitter somewhere on their body or on their craft project at the end of the day? And the answer is 100%, all nine of them will.
Yeah.
And the coronavirus is more contagious than glitter, which is pretty amazing.
I don't know about that. That's you're saying some crazy things there. Glitter is incredibly contagious.
You spend any reasonable length of time, like an hour,
yeah,
in a room with somebody who has coronavirus, the probabilities are extremely high that you will have some glitter on you. Only the glitter will be invisible, and it will multiply.
That's where it is. I understand now. The difference here between glitter and coronavirus is the age of highest infection. If the younger you are, the more likely everyone in the room is going to be infected with the glitter in a very short period of time. Having a five-year-old daughter, I know this for a fact. If you give a container of glitter to me or my wife, it's unlikely that anyone in the room will have glitter on them in the next hour. If you give my daughter, it is likely that everyone in the neighborhood will have glitter on them in the next hour. So I think it's a different transmission rate.
The difference may not be that great because the last reports that we've had, about 82% of the new cases in the last month have come from people who are below the age of 40.
Yeah.
Which means that the coronavirus COVID-19 infection rate is trending downward in age in a big hurry. We used to think that for some reason or other young kids didn't get it. Now we're beginning to realize that maybe the young kids do get it, and they just don't get very sick from it. And the sicker you get from it, the more likely you are to spread it. But it's moving downstream, and it's a lot. We really don't know how well people are paying attention to this until we check the party scene. If people are still having secret parties and secret get-togethers, not very secret, but they're having quiet get-togethers. No, they're not quiet. They're having non-publicized get-togethers. There's a church, for instance, where the church officials banned the church's meeting because it was going to spread the coronavirus, but they began to hold meetings in their houses,
which puts them in an even
tighter area.
Yeah.
And they were singing together and chanting together and doing the things that you do in church. When I say chanting, saying the same things together, prayers and so on. That is an extremely dangerous behavior. But people just really want, this powerful urge.
We're social creatures.
To hug and to get together and to be with other people and to be close. And it's really, really tempting to do that. It's just extremely dangerous. And this will be present with us until we have a vaccination available for just about everybody, and about 80 or at least 90% of us have gotten the vaccination. And until we do that, we're going to have coronavirus. It's going to be with us. And unfortunately, there was several surveys taken recently indicate a very significant number of the people, if the coronavirus vaccine was available today, wouldn't receive it. So it's going to be with us for quite a while. And we're going to have breakouts for quite a while, just like we've had recent breakouts of measles, and it wasn't a big deal because we were able to lock it down. But
and there's enough of the population that do have vaccinations. I mean, we've got more than a 50% herd immunity for measles. The vast majority of us have vaccinated. But there's a large group of kids in a lot of locations that have not been vaccinated for measles because their parents think it's somehow bad. Those are the people that are the most at risk, and the vaccine doesn't work 100% for everyone. So, and if you've got an at-risk child or you are at risk and you couldn't get the vaccine because your immune system would have had problems with it, then it's even worse for you because somebody having it without the vaccine can kill you.
There's two things we haven't mentioned.
There's lots of things we haven't mentioned. Go ahead.
That we need to mention. One is that you can contact us by sending an email to either Jeff or Jake, as the starters, at tpwc.com. Or you can type out thepersonalwealthcoach.com if you want to. But it's Jeff at tpwc.com or Jake at tpwc.com. The second thing you can do is keep listening because we need to play some commercials.
Yes, and I've got one question waiting out there for when we come back from the commercials. That I got Jake at tpwc.com. And we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. So the email addresses in here again are Jeff at tpwc.com or Jake at tpwc.com. And we'll be back on the other side. And we're back. This is Jake McClure, and on the line with me is
Jeff McClure.
All right, it worked. Do you have any questions lined up for you? I've got two of them now.
Fresh out of questions.
Okay.
Well, I've got a lot of questions, but not email questions.
I'm going to read them both. The subject line is, I need encouragement. The socialist, democrats, communists, fascists seem to be succeeding in tearing our country down. If the experiment in protection of life, liberty, and freedom for all fails, will our economy collapse? Should we start preparing for that in the event that the leftists succeed in November? If so, how? Or is it already too late and all hope lost? Okay, so let me kind of approach this. Anytime we have a presidential election, people get the feeling that if whoever that they want to be elected loses, that the state of the republic as we know it is over for good. That wasn't true with Obama. It wasn't true with Trump. There's differences in both administrations, major changes that took place. But permanent change requires changes to the Constitution. So that's an important thing. The beginning of this, you said socialist Democrats. And I'm going to say this, I'm not trying to pick apart your words, but I want to make sure that we understand what these words mean. Socialist Democrats, communists, fascists. Socialist Democrats are nearly communist. I'll agree with that. And that's definitely not the capitalistic approach that I endorse. Fascist. Any definition you want to use for that word requires a strong person in charge, usually a dictator. And the definitions all include one underlying fact. Far right, not far left. So I'm pointing this out because you're pointing out two ends of a spectrum here. Fascism is usually a form of socialism, of populism. And we're moving in that direction with the Trump administration. Populism is on the rise, the stimulus packages that we've done. None of this is bad. Each step, just like in most cases, is a good step. Taken as a whole and saying, combined, we're going to keep walking in this general direction, leads to an obvious conclusion, and that's fascism. If you look at the other side, if you look at Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, these people were preaching honest-to-goodness socialism of pay off all the debts of everything, figure out some way to pay for everything or for everyone, and we'll just raise taxes to do it. That system doesn't work either long-term. What we keep falling back to is these swings back and forth, and the average looks good, and we've been doing this for 200-plus years. We swing back and forth between different versions of populism. This is one of the benefits of two parties. There's a lot of problems with having a two-party system, but having two parties means that we have a good balance most of the time. I don't see Joe Biden or Donald Trump, either one, causing a total collapse of the economy. Because many of the suggestions that are on both sides of the aisle to do things differently would require a constitutional change, and there's just not enough votes for that. So there are a lot of things that can happen and that will happen, but a lot of the changes if Joe Biden is elected would be reversals of things that Donald Trump did. A lot of the changes Donald Trump did were reversals of the thing that Barack Obama did. So just keep that in mind. We're on a pendulum. And the swings are really wide, but the average is still looking good. And I realize averages are not comfortable when you've got wide swings. But don't prepare for a massive collapse of everything because your party, whichever one it is, doesn't win the election. Just vote again the next time around. That's the benefit of the system that we live in.
Could I put some perspective in that?
Sure, yeah.
If you go back and do like we've done and read the newspaper headlines and the commentary that was going on when Social Security was being enacted, the conclusion was that the capitalist state of the United States and the freedom of the country was going to be annihilated. Social Security, later Medicare, are socialist systems. They really are. I mean,
it's called Social Security. That is literally the reason why it's called Social Security.
And it is a taking from one group of people and giving to another. It is Medicare is available to everybody without regard to how much they've worked or how much money they've made.
In the past, it's not. Go ahead.
In other words, if you've gone out there and you spent your life working, if you worked a certain number of quarters, you get Social Security. But if you turn 65, you get Medicare. And that's very expensive, and we concluded that it's a good idea to take care of people at the bottom end of the spectrum. Medicaid is given to people without regard to how much they've worked or not worked. It's given to people who are at the very low end of the economic spectrum because we've concluded that health care, at least at some level, is a right.
Yeah, and can I interject something here really quickly?
Sure.
If we have... Well, let me come at this from a very different direction. If you're on the Rio Grande border, you can look across the border, and we've talked about this for years. The demographics of the people, the primary language of the people on either side of the border are the same. A lot of families, households had a primary Spanish language on the north side of the border as well as the south side of the border. But if you look at map pictures, if you're driving through, you see a tremendous difference in wealth on that border. That's because of the system that we have that causes people to earn more because they get to keep more. That's not changing fundamentally here, and that's an important thing. None of the things that are in debate right now change that. And I'll hand it right back to you.
Well, I think it's important to recognize that there is a balance between socialism. First off, I want to disagree with you, Jake, on a point. There are countries, particularly in Scandinavia, that are define themselves as socialists, and they are.
Mm-hmm.
But they have some of the biggest capitalist companies, and they are very much have a capitalist economy. There's a difference between communists and socialists. Socialists, we are... The United States, by the definition of the 19th century, is socialist today.
Yeah.
Just that simple. We give away things to poor people. We don't make them work for it.
All you have to do is look at the budget for the United States government, and two-thirds of it are for social welfare programs, including Social Security. And people say, hey, I paid into that. I deserve it. Well, that's the statement that's made by every socialist everywhere, is that, yeah, you did. You paid into it, but you're receiving more out of it than you put into it.
And here's the critical point. When we look at states and countries where they don't have some degree of socialism, and we look at where they're strictly right-wing, they strictly have no element of socialism at all, and there's quite a few of them in South America, and there's scattered around the world, you find quite a few. You find that their economic productivity is a fraction of what ours is now that we've become more socialist. If you look at our economic productivity in the 19th and early 20th century, when we didn't have certain elements of socialism in our country, the economic productivity in the United States is multiples of that today.
Right.
In other words, there's a balance between some unemployment insurance is socialism.
Yeah.
It's taking money from hardworking businesses, people who own businesses, and we own a business, and we pay unemployment insurance to people who aren't working.
And I'll tell you one other thing that's socialism, two other things that are socialism, really fast. Insurance in general and the lottery. Those are both socialist things. They're not governmental based in the insurance area, but the lottery is. So go ahead.
So the point is, there is a balance between socialism and non-socialism, libertarianism. Because the opposite of socialism isn't capitalism, because you can have a capitalist system, as they do in Sweden. Sweden is a socialist government.
Yeah,
it's a
Denmark.
Socialist system. But they have very strong capitalist system at the same time where they have some of the biggest, most productive companies in the world. They have a free-flowing stock market. They have entrepreneurship that rivals that of the United States with small businesses open up and running very profitably. And yet at the same time, for instance, Sweden guarantees basically a basic income to people.
Mm-hmm.
They have everything that we fear in socialism.
We're almost out of time.
They seem to be functioning very well in capitalism at the same time. So they're not contradictory to each other. Yeah, here we are, almost.
I agree. The difference, and we can get into the demographics of it next hour. I agree with you that it's not a death knell to have socialism in capitalism, but when it takes over without the work ethic that follows, then that's right. The death knell, and that's usually what communism represents. And we're about out of time for this hour. We got another question. I asked some really good questions about restaurants, and do we believe?
And
we've got some good stuff to add to that. But if you'd like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail waiting locally at
254-947-1111.
And you can reach that voicemail toll-free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com, or tpwc.com if you're lazy like me. You can email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. On our webpage, we have recordings of the radio program going back lots of years. We've got newsletters going back lots of years. You can read our philosophy, and you can also contact us through the contact form. So until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.